Checkerfin.
Fordham is always in my head.
Checkerfin. Checkerfin.
Yes.
It's the education gadfly.
Sex,
sex. Mike and Rick tell you
early college, high school, pain and suffering,
learning and teaching.
In your face, in your face,
your
face.
Listen to your words that they be preaching. Cause here's the education gadfly show. Yeah.
Hello, this is your host, Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Foundation, here with my co-host, a man whose favorite holiday is President's Day, Rick Hess.
Hey, Mike. Good to be here.
How are you, Rick?
I'm good. I heard you had big President's Day plans.
I was down with my parents in Hilton Head, South Carolina, enjoyed some sunny weather. My son got to play with his cousins. It was a lot of fun.
And I heard you spent it with what? The president of the Charleston Chamber of Commerce having caramel popcorn at a giant movie screening? Is this accurate?
That is not accurate. But I do wonder, Rick, how do you celebrate President's Day?
For me, it's a religious experience.
Really? That's part of the Jewish tradition?
It is. I like to take a bottle of Manischewitz up to the Masonic Temple. Right. Other years, sometimes I do the Lincoln Monument Memorial.
Okay. And does the Park Service give you a hard time about
that? They don't, because they understand that it's religious, you know, it's First Amendment kind of deal.
Yeah.
Do a little Manischewitz, kind of sing a little bit of tunology.
So do you like the Lincoln more than the Jefferson or vice versa?
You know, I try to do a rotation so that they all feel included.
Yeah. Okay. Lovely. Well, we got a lot to cover today. As always, we're going to talk about some important issues on the nation's agenda.
Important issues. I like that.
Yeah. So we're going to play Pardon the Gadfly. Then we have our Education Outrage of the Week, which has become a regular feature.
Wow.
One of our, some of our readers, listeners, I should say, haven't been all that impressed with it. Somebody said that we were trying to put a little Rush Limbaugh into the show.
They actually saw into your heart, because this is your giant strategy, isn't it?
See, first of all, the main problem with that comment is if we had a video podcast, they would know that Jeff Cooner is no little Rush Limbaugh. I mean, there's nothing little about Jeff Cooner. He's a big man. I mean, I think he could take on Rush Limbaugh at any time.
There is a lot of Jeff.
That's right.
Well, a lot of Jeff.
And it's not about being right wing or left wing. It's just about being outraged. And so we're going to hear an outrage today that I think is going to make everybody angry, no matter what their ideological or political affiliation.
I like it.
And finally, there's that, old standby, Education News of the Weird.
It is. It's a little old, a little stale.
But we're going to see if Liam can
step it up. All right.
Step it up. We want to see the competitive response, Liam. That's what we're going for today.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, Christina is busy getting ready for a big Fordham event that we're going to talk about a little bit later. So, Liam, get us started with Pardon the Gadfly.
Barack Obama told the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel last week that if vouchers could be proven to work, then he would relinquish his prior doubts about them. Rick, is this as big a deal as it seems to be?
Three responses. One, once again, Obama avoided actually saying anything with much content to it. Two, on the other hand, him avoiding saying anything negative is much happier comment than we are used to from Democrats talking about the Milwaukee parental choice program. And three, Joe Williams, head of Democrats for Education Reform, said a bunch of really nice things about Obama's statement. I have a lot of faith in Joe. So even though it sounds kind of like a non-statement to me from Obama, I'm willing to go with the Williams optimism.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is a big deal. I mean, he went on for several paragraphs about this issue, showed a lot of nuance. He clearly has thought about this issue quite a bit, and was willing to share his thoughts in public, not behind closed doors, about this very contentious issue. So I know that Obama gets a bum rap a lot about people saying, oh, there's no substance there. He doesn't talk about specifics. On this one issue, he got quite specific.
Well, what was your takeaway from his comments? I mean, right, he understood the program much more than most policies seem to.
Right.
And he understood the reasons fat parents might like it.
Yeah.
But what was the takeaway? What was the policy implication of what he said?
No, I mean, I think basically that he sees that there are some risks to the voucher program, that there's some concerns about stratification, that there's some concerns about what's going to happen to the kids left behind, whether or not there's a real competitive response. And he's not totally convinced that the academic gains for the kids in this program are all that extraordinary. I mean, I think, I would quibble with some of that, but I don't think that's it's not indefensible.
No. Those are all reasons. I thought that was all, articulate and bright. And oh, God, I sound like Joe Biden or something. Those were good comments. But at the
yes,
end of the day,
how was his
stance any different from substantively on that from the run-of-the-mill Democratic candidate at the end of the day?
No, oh my gosh, it's way different because the run-of-the-mill Democratic candidate will just say, I oppose vouchers. They're bad for public schools. Case closed. And he said a lot more nuance.
He said, I may or may not be open to embracing this stuff, potentially.
Next question.
It seems pretty clear that urban Catholic schools are losing students to charter schools. This wasn't how choice was supposed to work. Why are these two sectors battling it out rather than stealing market share from lousy district schools?
Yeah, I mean, this is a real killer. We've talked about this a little bit on the show already, a big Education Week story looking at what's happening in the District of Columbia right now, where a group of Catholic schools are converting to charter schools or trying to do so. It's very interesting. It makes you wonder if there is just a limit on the number of parents who are going to exercise choice. And once you've reached that saturation, then these various schools of choice are just going to be duking it out among themselves. Now, certainly the Catholic schools are not on an even playing field because they have to charge tuition. And even with the DC voucher program in place for a few thousand kids, it's not enough to make it up. But look, I mean, I wonder, Rick, I mean, you know, what if it's the case is just, look, that half of the parents out there in any big city are just not going to participate in school choice. Is that a problem?
It's not a problem. I mean, unless they're not participating because they're not quality sensitive. But given the track record of charters to date, it's hard to make the argument that parents are necessarily insensitive to quality.
Hold on. I mean, but you look at the District of Columbia. I mean, you've got a couple of superstar schools like KIPP and others that are doing an incredible job, much better than the other charter schools and much better than the public schools. I mean, why isn't every parent in the District of Columbia trying to get into that school?
Well, I mean, for one thing, those schools are fully subscribed.
Yeah, but why don't they have a waiting list, you know, that is equal to the rest of the kids in the district, you know? I mean, there are still parents out there in crummy DC public schools that have better options nearby that are not trying to get into them.
Well, I mean, I think this points out something we've talked about before, which is there's this tendency to romanticize parental attention to school quality. And it's not at all, you know, it's not at all clear that, you know, that every parent or even most parents are militant investigators of school quality and are going to be able or interested in picking the best school for their kid.
Yeah. Well, I think this is a tragedy that at the time that we don't have enough good public school options in these big cities, that we have Catholic schools that are good schools that are closing just because basically we can't figure out a political solution to paying for them.
Hmm.
It's a tragedy, Rick.
Hmm. So, but what if it's simply that folks given a choice between two seemingly reasonable schools would rather go to the free one?
Yeah, well, so we need to make the other ones free also. Then they'd be on an even playing field.
Ah.
Is it true that Fordham's new report, authored by Rick Hess and Kobe Loop, is a, quote, laughably reactionary tract on labor union contracts and public education, unquote, with a, quote, nasty, unquote, cover? Is it true that it, quote, involved dozens of hapless junior researchers like Kobe? That's not really in the quote. In a truly cynical enterprise, unquote.
Wow. That feels like a slightly slanted question. Liam, where did that description come from? Why don't we just tell the listeners?
Well, it was from the UFT blog, Ed Wise. And this was their description of our report. And I just wanted to say for the record, there was only one hapless junior researcher involved in this project, and that was Kobe Loop.
But he did the work of dozens.
He did. He did. Well, if you include, you know, Emily Cohn at the National Council on Teacher Quality, who did the original database, and maybe some of her colleagues, then perhaps we might get up to two or three or four hapless.
You know, the interesting thing here about the response from Edwise is it's not at all clear they actually bothered to read the thing.
No, if you I don't read think it, they did.
We actually puncture some of the myths on the right and the left about contracts. Some of these excuses that, oh, contracts aren't ever a problem. We're able to show very concretely in very specific locales where they really are a problem for people trying to, you know, turn around, you know, troubled schools or improve the district. And we also real clearly say that in a lot of other cases, contracts let school boards and superintendents and principals do more than they're currently doing.
Right.
And these folks are sometimes they're saying, oh, the contract won't let me, when the black and white, you know, evidence suggests actually the contract does let them. Mm-hmm. So, you know, people... it's much easier to call things laughably reactionary than actually talk about the findings.
Yeah.
So, you know, at least it's nice that they bothered to blog about it at all.
Yeah. No, and they, you know, they took umbrage that we would question things like, you know, paying all teachers the same no matter which subjects they teach, you know, whether you're a phys ed teacher or a physics teacher. Well, now, come on. I mean, you know, most, I think, if you know, if you take polls and these sorts of things, you know, people in this country say, look, if you got a shortage in math and science, you need to pay math and science teachers some more. These are not crazy reactionary right wing ideas.
Well, actually, I mean, if we were, you know, if we were more interested in digging into old partisan fights, we would call them laughably reactionary for right. suggesting it's problematic to pay some teachers with certain skills more than others. But we don't need to go there.
Right, right, right. So we don't call them laughably reactionary, but we'll call Jeff Kooner that.
Mm-hmm.
Jeff, I was just looking for a segue.
No, that's fine.
But no, you know.
My wife says actually worse things about me.
Yes. Oh, well, we should get her on the show sometime. Jeff, tell us. Tell us, Jeff. What are you outraged about this week?
Well, Mike, this is truly something that really is outrageous. This story comes out of Philadelphia. It's so bad, it's hard to believe. Apparently, one of Philadelphia's most wanted was found teaching in a school in North Philadelphia. Up in northern Philadelphia, there is a school called Huntington Park, which serves about 1,200 students with disciplinary problems, low-performing students. And for 3 years, a gentleman by the name of Arnex Honore, sort of a thuggish-looking guy, you just have to see him. I mean, he looks like a predator, was essentially having an affair with a 14-year-old girl. This went on for 3 years.
So they started when she was 11, or they ended when she was 17?
They ended when she was 17. Mm. And so, and they fathered a child. He fathered a girl with her. Now, I guess, 3 years old now. But this went on for 3 years. Obviously, statutory rape, sex with a minor. In 2006, charges were filed. And for 1 year, as the charges were floating through the court system, this guy was teaching eighth graders at that school. And nobody in the school administration did a thorough background check or wanted to even bother to concern themselves with the fact that you had this predator, this guy who was basically raping a 14-year-old girl, having sex with minors, teaching other kids. It is absolutely outrageous. And what's even more outrageous, and this is what really gets my blood boiling, is now all of a sudden, nobody's responsible for hiring this guy. All of a sudden, the school district comes out and says, no, we didn't hire him. It was a contracting company called Community Education Partners, which apparently operates three schools in the area. And so they say, well, don't blame us. We did some kind of a background check, but it's up to the school district officials to do a more thorough background check. So supposedly this guy just fell through the cracks.
So wait a minute here, Jeff. So this guy was charged with this crime that he committed with a student at that school, okay? And it's going through the court case, and nobody thought to tell the people at that school that there was a court case pending?
No, my understanding is that that student, that 14-year-old, did not go to that school.
Okay.
This was a 14-year-old girl, but he had an affair with her for 3 years, got her pregnant. He was teaching 8-year-old boys. Charges were filed in 2006. Four times, apparently, hearings were held. But for whatever reason, it didn't go to court. The charges were temporarily dropped. Then they were reinstated in the summer of 2007. And finally, somebody warned school administrators, it was a tip, saying, well, this guy's mugshot is on websites across the state. You have somebody there, I believe, who is a teacher who is on one of Philadelphia's most wanted lists. And so finally, the school did something. But my question is, how did this guy fall through the cracks? And my other big question is, how come there wasn't a thorough background check, and why is nobody being held accountable for this? I mean, you know, I'm sure many of my listeners out there are going to say, well, that's another right wing. Here's Jeff Kooner going on another right wing rant. Well, since when did, you know, tolerating criminals teaching our kids in the classroom become right wing? This is not right wing or left wing. This is just sensible human decency. We don't want guys preying on 14-year-old girls to be teaching 8-year-old boys or 8-year-old girls. It's just, it's outrageous, it's ridiculous, and somebody should be fired over this.
What do you think, Rick? Do you think we can get Democrats and Republicans to come together around this issue that teachers shouldn't be having sex with their students?
I think this is one of those Obama-like issues that we can kind of reach hands across partisan divides.
Yes, post-partisanship. So, you know, the internet. Now, there's a policy point here is that these schools are contract schools, right?
Mm-hmm.
And this is one of these issues where you got to be very clear where the responsibilities are. Sounds to me like those schools need to be held accountable.
I think the school district needs to be held accountable, and I definitely think the contracting company needs to be held accountable. But somebody needs to be held accountable.
Whew. All right. Thank you, Jeff. Education outrage of the week. Now it's that special time, the time we wait for all week long. Education news of the weird time. With our special correspondent, Liam Julian. Liam, what's weird this week?
Another setback for vouchers. Private school students are being mugged. Children at the 13,000-pound-a-year Highgate School in North London have had mobile phones, music players, and wallets stolen. They are being told to disguise their uniforms on the way home as police warn the pupils are targeted because they look rich.
Nice.
Head teacher Adam Pettit said, quote, "The police say young people in all schools should be allowed to dress down on their way home to and from school. On their way to and from school, if it makes them safer. We follow that advice, and our students don't have to wear their uniforms outside school," unquote. One pupil noted that, quote, "The staff haven't told us that we need to make ourselves scruffy or anything. We still have to have our top button done up. It's just that they advise us to wear a coat over our school blazers." And that's Education News of the Weird.
Hmm. Now, see, Rick, you practice this all the time, you know, mm-hmm. because you are known for coming to work looking, shall we say, rather scruffy.
Mm-hmm.
And have you ever been mugged on the way from the metro station to your office?
I have not.
Interesting.
It works.
But now, today, you're all dressed up, snazzy, got a tie on. You better watch out.
That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, you better watch out. I mean, so these poor kids, what are they supposed to do? Like, bring change of clothes? There's like a Superman thing they change in a phone booth?
Sure, yeah. I mean, you can bring a change of clothes. You could possibly mm-hmm. keep clothes that you're going to change into there at school yeah. if you have a locker.
Yeah.
You know, that's a problem. Now that there's really aren't phone booths anymore, it's much more difficult for kids to make that change.
Yeah. You know,
now that we have glass offices at Fordham, it's difficult yeah. for anybody to change mm-hmm. as well.
Now, Mike, you seemed a little more perturbed about the notion of these 13,000-pound-a-year kids getting mugged than you do about your typical run-of-the-mill kids dealing in low quality what? Schools. Is this fair?
No, it's not fair.
You sure?
What is it, casting aspersions on me? No, anytime a child is mugged, it's an outrage. Maybe Jeff should do that on his education. This could have been an education outrage of the week,
mm-hmm.
but it is a little more weird than outrageous. Yeah. Mm. So, no, for the record, I'm against
it. Did you ever wear a uniform when you were in school?
No. I went to public school from K to 12.
See, this is interesting, right? Because some publics try to require uniforms to enhance discipline.
Right.
But the irony is they make you a magnet outside of school.
Right.
Especially if your uniform happens to have gang colors in it.
Yes.
These nuanced dilemmas. I bet Obama's going to get on this next week when he's down in Houston and Dallas.
But these public school uniforms, they don't typically make kids look rich.
No. Nor, and they try to avoid gang colors, too. That's mm-hmm. why they go for the beige.
Unless you're in Scotland.
Gang colors in Scotland?
Sure, all those tartans.
Mm. Mm. Are they really a gang?
Yeah, I mean, that's where they derive from, right? Different tartans for different clans.
Wow.
Well, wow. But I wish we could keep talking about this, but unfortunately, that is all the time we have for this week. So, Rick, until next week.
I'm Rick.
And I'm Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Foundation, signing off.